throughout my time in other, you know, in other jobs, other sort of careers, other startups, I always found that I was limited by a couple of factors. And one of those was being able to do the technical side myself. And so that's kind of the true origin story of this.
What's up, everybody? Armand here, back with another episode. Today's guest, we have Jonah Peak. Now, Jonah is the founder of We Cover Letters, and he's using ChatGPT to help simplify cover letters and resumes. So he connected the API to a couple other applications, and now it's spitting out cover letters for people. Something super cool is that he taught himself entirely how to do this from scratch through just researching and good old YouTube, pretty much. Jonah then teaches listeners how they can start leveraging ChatGPT with zero prior knowledge. His website's getting like 500 visits a day, so it's pretty insane. Sometimes more, sometimes less. We talk also about how your habits evolve and change when you have kids. Jonah has a baby, so his habits are looking very different these days. We also go into a cool tangent on cognitive biases, if you're interested in those. And we talk about tracking money and eating, what you're eating, tracking that, and supplements, and we just have an overall really great conversation. I enjoyed this episode a lot. I hope you enjoy this as well. Please enjoy listening to the Play Hard Podcast.
Work hard, play hard, work hard, play hard, work hard, play hard, work hard, play hard.
Let's just get down to it. What's up, Jonah? How you doing?
Hey, doing really well. I'm a huge Friday fan, like many of us, but with a tiny kid, that kind of just leads into the sixth day of the week. Because if you go out and you find yourself to be hungover on Saturday morning with the child, it is a nightmare. So you just do another day of the week, and sometimes you take early naps. It's what you'd imagine, but it's all good.
Yeah, I can imagine it's different with kids, especially a youngin. How old is, I believe it's a baby, right? Like just newborn?
Yeah, Juniper is like 14, 15 months. So if you have kids, you go by months. If you don't, year and a half. Depends because of those milestones. But
I used to wonder that. Why do people say months? Until someone explained to me, it's like, oh, it's the development thing. Like they just grow so rapidly from the course of 1 month to another. Like you kind of have to keep track in that.
Yeah, 100%, because it's like, oh, you're crawling, and then a little bit later, you're like standing up, and then this other thing. And so actually, it's funny, if you're around other parents and you throw the months numbers around, they ask you kind of relatively specific questions about where you're at, which is kind of neat.
Mm, yeah, I'm nowhere near there, so I wouldn't even know where to begin.
You figure it out when you figure it out. I think that's the only thing I can say. But I will tell you this, and somewhat relevant to your show, is that it does change every habit that you had and think you had and want to have completely, 100%, and mostly for the better.
And I was listening to a podcast. I think it was one we've talked about, My First Million, the episode where Nick Huber comes on to talk to Sam Parr, and it was a very recent one. And they were talking about how like having kids will just rapidly change, not just that, but like your mindset. Like some people who were kind of working, kind of just like living, whatever, traveling a lot, they have a kid, all of a sudden they're super focused on career. It just kind of like shifts where your priorities lie. How does that relate to your experience?
I think it's true for the most part. I would bet you though that the folks in that scenario had things already kind of cooking and revving up. Whereas if you're trying to get something off the ground or you're working to that degree, sometimes you're just saying, hey, I can't wait for that nap time so I can grab an hour or two to and you know, work on my project. Whereas maybe you already have it up and running, in the case of Nick Huber, who has a pretty well-oiled machine going, and maybe it operates differently. But the motivation there is 100% true, because you want them to kind of look at you and be proud, and not sort of like, oh, there's the guy who keeps, you know, tinkering for all of time, you know, or whatever. But yes, I agree with the majority of that for sure.
Yeah, it's kind of like, I don't know if you're a fan of Dave Chappelle, but one of my favorite bits is he says he like comes home from a long time touring, and his kids just kind of see him. They're like, oh, there's Mr. Promises back from the road. It's like, that's not what you want.
Yeah, no, I got you.
Yeah, so for the listener, this is Jonah Peak. Am I saying your last name right, Peak?
Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah, And he's sporting a fantastic mustache right now. Just saw him fairly, I think we saw each other last week, was it? This week? Yeah. I don't know. Fairly recently. Yeah, yeah. Wow, this has been a long-ass week. And he is the founder. He's getting off the ground. This is really exciting because he's in the very early stages of a very promising project, We Cover Letters. What is We Cover Letters? You want to talk about that a little bit and kind of how you stumbled into this? Because this is a fantastic idea. And not only that, but you have some very real, like very tangible proof of concept.
Yeah, that's awesome. And so we actually connected in an entrepreneur group. So that's kind of why we started to talk about this, which I'm a huge fan of. Everyone, please find one of those.
Yeah.
So AI is starting to come out and starting to get more and more popular. And we're all seeing the text-based AI projects are really doing great. And so I had this really kind of like, I'll say lame idea around December saying that people need to send each other more handwritten cards. So I made this site called Festive Notes. I plugged it in with OpenAI and was able to write like Christmas cards. They were sick, but like, what's the point, right? No one really cares. at all. And so, you know, as I saw that it could work, I used that as kind of the proof of concept of how you connect, let's just say like Bubble.io, kind of a simple site builder with the OpenAI API, and was just saying, you know, I can kind of put these pieces together, but where can I actually do something that's more valuable that actually will give people a reason to kind of use the site? And so, you know, cover letters were something that I hated writing. And I know a lot of people hated writing, and even the blogs, I started to go down that road, even the blogs that describe how to do it. And this is like Harvard Business Review. This is like Business Insider. The first paragraph's always like, yo, this is a drag. You all hate it, but you got to do it. Right. So, So, you know, without talking to the person, I realized, and you know, through my own experience that people freaking hate this thing. And so I started to run a couple of them through and started to just tinker with how the prompt might look and how the connection, how the pieces might come together. And it actually just started spitting out these amazing cover letters. And, you know, I was thinking I might, you know, dabble with, you know, throwing some job applications out there. And so it's just like, well, this tool or this, you know, this technology, this tool could really help a lot of people with the thing that they hated the most. So I popped out a prototype and just threw it up on Reddit to see what people thought. And the post kind of went bananas, and it found that there's like three groups of people that tend to come out of this, you know, three camps, let's just say. It's, I never write them because they're so lame and I hate cover letters, so I just don't do it. Some people even paste their resume twice. They don't even follow the rules or whatever. rules and quotes.
Baller move right there. Probably not getting the job, but it's a statement.
Well, that's the thing. And no one really knows because it's someone behind this wall, right? It's behind the screen. Who knows why they picked you? The computer might not have even picked you. So hard to know there. There's another group of people that kind of came through and are like, yeah, I have one. Maybe I generated it or whatever. And then I just kind of do the cut paste, a little bit of edits along the way, which is cool. But that to me felt like you weren't kind of going all in on trying to get this thing, this job, this opportunity. And then there's kind of the third camp, which I tended to fall into where, you know, I'd agonize over it being perfect. It would take me hours to even get to the point where I send it. And 3 months later, you get the automated message that says, hey, you know, this is not, you're not getting the job or whatever. And so that's
for the lucky ones, dude. I've noticed sometimes people don't even, they just get ghosted. I can't imagine spending hours on a cover letter just to have not even like the respect of a reply saying we're going somewhere else.
Well, I think that's 100% true. And then part of that is like, okay, should the next product be some nice rejection letter? And I was like, maybe later. There's a couple of other things cooking, but I was
You're giving weapons to both sides. It doesn't matter. Crossing the line.
No, seriously. you know, so that third camp's kind of where I live. And so the post went crazy and a lot of people started to generate, you know, cover letters and sort of it sort of developed and started to snowball a bit from there. This is, you know, not revolutionary, but it's interesting in the sense that AI can do a pretty damn good job. And I'm not asking people to pay. I want to try to figure out a way to monetize it in an interesting way. Every other site out there paywalls it. And the reason I don't love that concept or that idea is, you know, people have been sending messages saying, hey, look, like I've been out of work for years, and I'm embarrassed to even tell people that, you know, I can't afford to be paying for these types of things. And
yeah,
you know, folks like us, maybe in tech, who can throw a couple bucks at a cover letter, you know, it's a different story, but I don't really feel like I can, you know, in the goodness of my heart, capitalize on people who are really kind of struggling. And so that's kind of where we're at now. We're kind of ramping up with traffic. We're getting a lot of feedback. And we're just throwing out there a little bit of a resume tool, which I just put out there too, because that seems to be what people really get the value out of. And I'd be really curious to see what people kind of think about that once they find it. I just hit the link in there. I didn't really announce it.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is one thing I really like. I mean, this whole thing is really sick. You're solving a real problem. And you're going about it in a good way. I think it's pretty great that you recognize, number one, they may not have the money to pay. So like for a business case, it doesn't make sense trying to go after them. But also it's like, that's not even what you're doing. It's because it's not the right thing to do. And I really respect that. I love the name We Cover Letters. I think that's such a fan, like, I love a name that's simple and it encapsulates everything you do, but it's also kind of catchy. Like, you nailed it. Did you have, how long did it take? Did that just like spill out, or did you have to like really think about that name?
You know what's funny? It did spill out, but I didn't realize that I liked it until like a week or two later. I look back at it and I was like, that's funny. That so works. Someone even pointed it out back to me. I was like, what's simple that I can just throw behind a URL and just sort of, I can start sharing.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think that one's a lucky one. I don't know.
Yeah, no, that's
for everything else written, and I just got
that's so good. All right, so now you have some momentum building, and from what I understand, and you just messaged in our entrepreneur group today, the mastermind group. I'm getting everyone in that group on the show, just so you guys know. If you're listening out there, all of you, you're coming on. But one has already been on. We'll keep the group a secret, but one previous guest is on. Guy that started it all. So you mentioned in our group, now you're pivoting, you're going towards resumes as well. From what our last conversation, this has to do with what people have been saying they really need. Is this what people are going to pay for? Are you doing this as like you're doing a free version? Is cover letters, you pay for the resume because it's more important? Like what is your angle with the resume portion?
I've been thinking about it, and we've actually chatted about this somewhat recently, and I'm kind of on the fence, so I could go one way or the other. There's this really interesting concept. I just finished the book Setting the Table. Maybe it's on the shelf behind you with Danny Meyer. Really pretty interesting read. Let me know. I can bring you the book. But he had this concept of today dollars or tomorrow dollars, and that has to do with a number of different things. Someone comes into his restaurant and doesn't like the salmon, for example, instead of saying, hey, you ate half of it, he just takes it off the menu, off the bill, sorry. And he's basically like, don't worry about it, because he knows that if you have that great experience, you'll come back. And so I'm thinking about it in a sense of, do I want to sort of turn this into a business that's, a large business that's kind of like the others, and you paywall out a bunch of tools? Or is there another way? Is there a clever way to do this that maybe doesn't block some of these tools that people could benefit, and could be more of a community-based group? Or could it be something different that's kind of clever? I'm probably guilty of not wanting to do the same thing that other people have done, and I think that doesn't always benefit you.
Yeah,
there's a clear way, a clear path to monetization. Paywall, ads, whatever. But I would like to find something that's a little more interesting and potentially a little more clever. And that's what I'm sort of tinkering with. And that's also the value of the group that we're all, we're on together.
It sounds like you're moving towards a more like community-based option rather than the, what's the word? I mean, tried and true is the thing that I'm thinking of, but that's not the right like message, I guess, of what we're saying, because it's like you could go that option and it's been proven and it works, but that's not what you are also trying to get out of this. You want to build sort of like a community of helping people, and then right now this was pretty sweet, is that you are profitable on this through straight donations, which is insanely impressive. Cause that means people really would need this to the point where they're like, yeah, we'll throw some bills to the, it's kind of like Wikipedia, they run on donations.
If that could be the way that it worked and it pulled in a little bit along the way throughout the year or whatever, I would be so happy. I think that would be, you know, I would consider that a win. But you know, I think if it ends up being something that, you know, it's just the hobby, the side project, we were chatting about this earlier, the thing that you tinker with to learn AI, to learn, I got in the back of my head that I should know how APIs work, because you could then start to build things and connect things. And kind of throughout my time in other, you know, in other jobs, other sort of careers, other startups, I always found that I was limited by a couple of factors. And one of those was being able to do the technical side myself. And so that's kind of the true origin story of this, is saying, hey, these tools are sweet. There's enough YouTube videos out there for me to figure this out. Let's just start tinkering. And it just so turns out that I stumbled upon something that people, you know, really like and adds some value.
So that's something that I want to break apart now, is how did you get here? And like, what exactly with AI are you trying to get? I guess two separate questions. But my first question is, like, do you have prior technical experience? Like, are you a coder? Do you understand like the ins and outs of web design or maybe some sort of back-end design? Like, is this your experience, or are you straight YouTube Academy just learning on the fly?
I'm a YouTube Academy person. I am not necessarily
student of the arts.
I think that's the way to do it, because then you kind of can focus really heavily on what you want to do instead of sort of learning a ton of that maybe aren't necessary. But I'm not the school guy. I never was. I had a hard time with that type of education. I think they call it an audiodidact. I'm not sure if that's the right word for that, but you sort of learn by reading, doing, failing, screwing things up, figuring things out versus taking the courses. So I don't know. It's a painful way to learn sometimes, but there's nothing really formal here aside from the fact that I haven't really been interested in paying people to build sites for me, and I've wanted things to move faster when other people had the reins and, you know, they had a different timetable than I did. And so I said, hey, let's just do YouTube Academy and say, hey, let's figure this thing out and let's use it as a project.
Yeah. Damn. So what kind of resources have you been looking up to learn how to do this with AI and connecting everything to, and like, what's kind of the tech stack you're using? If you're okay with sharing the secrets.
So I might just post how I did the whole thing. Just because that would, well, I want to flesh it out, and someone else might be able to do the same thing and benefit from it. They'll probably make more money than I do, and that's fine.
Or they could also tell you a more efficient way of doing it, and then you can build on that.
It's a fair point. Yeah, so not worried about sharing a whole ton, but so I read through the entire documentation for OpenAI just to kind of understand how the pieces work and how they put the whole thing together. And then throughout kind of looking through some of the more or less basic enterprise products for building sites, had stumbled upon Bubble, Bubble.io. And in the past felt like it was too much. You know, I was like, I could build a Squarespace site, you know, my sleep. But when it comes to Bubble, it has almost too much functionality for sort of a basic mind like myself. But realized they had a pretty unbelievable API connector. And once I had figured that out with the greeting card site, I realized I can kind of just start to replicate the pieces. And so I basically put those two together, figured out how to connect Bubble to, you know, the OpenAI API and the documentation there, and just, you know, spent some of those days where you put hours in and you get nowhere, and then the next day you spend 15 minutes and it all works type of experience. I'm sure you know you're used to that, but
I do that with writing a lot.
Yeah,
it's like I'll feel like I'm not. That's dude. That's exactly. Remember I told you I did a rep post that did really well. That's exactly what happened. Is I spent about 3 weeks trying to write and get my thoughts together, and I felt super frustrated, like I wasn't getting anywhere, and I just like rage typed this post in 20 minutes, and then it got like 300,000 impressions, and I was like, wow.
Man.
At first I was like, it's that easy, and then I was like, no, it took a lot to get there. Like, it really took a lot to get there.
And so how many of your posts got removed or banned by moderators along the way? I don't have a count. I have a good count.
Only one, and it was on our motorcycles, and it's because I was like spitting out ideas for like some sort of app. This was my idea. And they took it down for soliciting, even though I wasn't soliciting. I was just saying, like, would anyone be interested in an app? Well, I guess it was soliciting. I was like, would anyone be interested in a program that kind of like, what it does is it takes your GoPro video or anything like that, and it runs it through like this database using AI. Like, I don't really know AI. I would have to recruit like scientists for this, or some kind of like someone who could help me, I guess. Maybe I'll take your route and start learning myself. But this was, the idea was to like have a database of like crashes, mistakes, clean writing, good writing, like all different types of, like, anyone who ever had like GoPros their rides and then puts it through here, it would just measure like how safe is your riding, or how like reliable is your riding, like, am I braking too fast, should I be braking a little less, like, it, like, the main idea would be to do inputs later on, which is like what MotoGP, I guess it'd be really expensive, but like if you have a common problem of like pushing on the back brake way more than the front brake, and that causes like slide outs later on in your riding, or like maybe 1 out of 100, but like you hit that 1 out of 100 times you slide out, this video would be able to spit back out like, hey, maybe don't do that. Or if you're a racer, it would be able to be like, all right, you should like lean more in this corner, or some stuff like that. But the consensus was, number one, it was soliciting. Number two, everyone on that goddamn subreddit doesn't care to be a better rider. They just want to be idiots. They just want to go fast and like,
yeah.
No, I mean, not, maybe not our motorcycle, but like that was a big thing, is like the one comment that sticks out, this guy's like, I know what I have to do to be a safer rider, I just don't do it. And I was like, all right, word. Well, like, not the right audience got it.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, you probably learned that, okay, maybe, like, there's all these products you think should exist. We all do, but
exactly.
Maybe, you know, that's actually, that's good customer research. I mean, think about if you had gone and downloaded, like, 1,000 hours of motorcycle video and started working towards that product. Yeah, right? I mean, it's like, that's kind of the way to do it.
But yeah.
But you're like kind of right on. I mean, I think you need, there's these like nuances of sort of authenticity that I think when you hit, like when you rage typed your post, or I kind of threw that post I threw out there, that just kind of just nail it. And I still haven't been able to kind of analyze it and understand why it worked. And I tried to recreate it, and I've been banned more times than I can count. Or it just goes nowhere, you know, like literally nowhere.
No, I totally get it. Dude, you know what my brother says a lot? Cause he's, I've talked about it on the show a lot. He's a musician, he's a music artist, and he is like the spirit of an artist. He has that more than anyone I've ever met. And one thing that he tells me, he's like, dude, you can't recreate it, because sometimes it's literally just a moment in time. He's like, you were feeling a certain way, the audience was ready to receive it a certain way, it was ready on this day, maybe something happened in the stars aligned and people really wanted cover letters on this day, and like the time that you posted mattered, like all these different factors we don't think about. For us, it was just like, we'd been slugging at bats for so long, and all of a sudden, pitcher throws us a home run, fucking nail it out of the park. Like, you're not going to get that. Well, I mean, the better you are, the better you hit those. But, like, everyone starts somewhere, you know? Like, I think the purpose of riding, keeping up with this, like, entrepreneurs, same could be said as pitching to VCs. You could fuck up 100 pitches, and then that 101 is the one where you get, like, tons and tons of money. I guess it's the amount of at-bats you get. At least that's my take on it. Like, I did really well that one post yesterday. I got a post with like 3 upvotes, and like a bunch were like, I saw the percentage, I thought this was so good, but I saw the percentage and it was like 63% like downvoted, and I was just like, god damn, like I really thought I was doing something here. But at the same time, it's like that, hey, at least I went at bat. At least I posted something. Now I know what people respond to.
Oh, God. I threw one out there that was like, that ended up getting the first comment. I was like, I got to delete this because I feel so embarrassed. But it was like, this post is like if a 90s infomercial wrote a Reddit post about how hard it is to write a cover letter. And I was like, oh, God. It was so bad. It was like, I was embarrassed. I was like, all right, you're right.
Yeah. That's hilarious. That's a pretty clever diss, though.
It's really good. I mean, I think I spent the next hour looking at old infomercials of people like spilling their juice all over the couch because they didn't have like the armchair rigid cover for it, or some stupid device like that. Yeah, but the cat stepped.
Dude, you should double down and do a 90s infomercial themed post. I think that'd be hilarious.
This is a good point. That's a good. I missed opportunities.
So right now you're working on We Cover Letters, but in the past you've had a couple other experience as a co-founder. One was at El Uno. I don't know if I'm saying that right.
Yeah.
And then Granada Fund.
So both of those were attempts to start things up off the ground and kind of test different models and different ways of doing something. These were coming out of at a Lime. So Granada Fund was an attempt at a new fundraising method for D2C companies. So a lot of times businesses in the direct-to-consumer space have a trouble raising money, but they have money flowing through their system. And so we wanted to put together a way for them to raise some capital and then pay back the money and reduce the equity that the investor had taken in the actual company. And so we would come in, give them some cash and then say, all right, cool, you can buy us off your cap table as you know you keep going. And so essentially yeah. It's a rev share type model, which you know was interesting. We didn't want to lock up our money for 8 or 10 years. The hard part is that it was such a unique structure that it didn't play well with other investors. So you couldn't come in and say, give a 25, 50K check if they're trying to raise more, because other investors would say, hey, like, I don't want to mess with that deal.
Interesting.
That's the structure, right? So it kind of got a little, yeah. It wasn't sort of a straightaway type of fundraising. And so we weren't actually able to successfully get that off the ground without being the sole investor in all of these deals, and many of these companies needed more than 25, 50, or 100, which is kind of where we wanted to sort of play. So that was a bit of a new experience in trying to do something like an old system in kind of a new way, and we weren't able to kind of pull that one off. So a little bit of an L there, but learning is another word that starts with L. So there's a little cheese for you. Eluna, which I'm wearing now, you can't see, was a way to say, how do we use blockchain, art, and NFTs to kind of merge into a high-end apparel brand? And we put together the pieces to get this thing made in Mexico. We had bought the best fabrics we could find up in LA, and we were bringing all of those pieces together. And, you know, there's a number of lessons there, but, you know, one is the market conditions can shift. And so we went from raging hot bull market to kind of ice cold NFT market.
Yeah.
And I think that the last thing or another thing that might be a takeaway is when you are working and partnering with other people, making sure that everybody has the same sort of level of interest and dedication to a project. Whereas if you have three people, and I'll use myself as an example, a co-founder who's also having a kid, you can get pulled in different directions. So when you have three people that have maybe an additional project, it's really hard to kind of get everybody sort of sequenced and held in the same way to get something to that next level and compete on one of the most enormous and sort of busy industries that is, you know, apparel. Sure, it's high end, it's unique.
Yeah.
It has tech kind of built into it, but you have to be really specific about how, you know, you talk about something like that. And so that kind of was another one of the L's along the way.
That makes sense. And I really appreciate you sharing the learning part of those L's, because that was going to be my next question. You're making my job easy. It's a great interview. I really appreciate that. And I really like the name El Uno, just because my last name is Uno, and that's just the Uno.
It was the idea behind it. I was proud. I came with this one. I was proud of this one. Was each one was supposed to be unique, an individual. So El Uno was supposed to be the one. So it was one.
Yeah.
That's really excited.
Dude, you got any more merch? I might have to get one for myself.
Well, I have one more of these. So if you wear a large,
I'll have to see what piece speaks to me, and then I'll purchase.
I like it.
Yeah, so to change gears a little bit, we were talking a little bit before the show went on how you got started in the tech world and the entrepreneurship world, and it had to do with something that really changed kind of your entire life and your habits and everything that you do. So now that we're getting into the habits portion, you want to go into that, what happened, yeah, and that shift that happened?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is a story I've written about but haven't told too widely, but it's the type of thing that, you know, changed my life for the better. So I grew up in Vermont, snowboarding, came to San Diego. When you come here, you learn to surf. So in the process of learning to surf, I got connected with Monster Energy. I literally found a Craigslist ad for promo can slinger. So we would go to all the spots in San Diego, best job ever, because they would say go to Petco. Sick. I don't know where Petco was. They put in the GPS, go to Qualcomm, and so on. So that sort of culture married really well with the surf culture. And so, I got that second job with this group of guys who were teaching surf lessons with this group of people. And so I did that for a number of years. And this sort of creates a certain type of habit. So we were teaching four lessons a day. We would do, each one was like $20 a lesson, and you get fingers heavily crossed for tips, but you'd go, 9, 11, 1, 3. And if you sort of had this sort of middle break where you could just scarf down some lunch, and if you did kind of miss that mark, you just got lethargic and it was just a big mess. So typically what we do is we just get up super early, we go straight to work, we power all the way through till 5 or 6, maybe 5:30 or 6, and we'd head home and we eat as hard as we could for 3 or 4 hours. And so we really just packed it in. And so maybe that was,
some unintentional intermittent fasting.
So now, I'm doing fasting now and I'm looking back on it and I was like, "Oh damn, that was the thing." Along the way, so I started to notice, that my strength was decreasing. I went on these hikes and people who were, I was relatively lean, but people were passing me. People were passing me hiking up this mountain, people that shouldn't be passing me in my mind. People were kind of recreational hikers, and I figured, I was a healthy person. So it decreased to the point where I'd been staying with some friends. I drove home, which I probably shouldn't have done because I don't remember any of this. And I was in my girlfriend at the time's bed. We're married now. So this leads to that. But she comes home and I'm nearly into a coma. And so she drags me out into the car and I don't want to go. We end up at the hospital. Turns out, with no family history or any of that, I have type 1 diabetes, which is not common to get. You don't get that at age 27. It's super rare. And so now you go from this life of sort of kind of eating what you want, doing what you want, surfing when you want, to being very careful about how you eat, you think, you have to, diet, you have to dose everything, and you have to dose things that you don't even think you have to do. If stress maybe spikes your blood sugars, and maybe that's a whole different health podcast. But what it does, or did for me, was it forced me to start to think about everything in steps, and it forced me to sort of slow down at times and say, okay, I have to plan. I have to say, if I'm leaving, I need 1, 2, 3, 4 items. And if I don't have them, it's going to be a problem. So through that sort of change in life completely from, being just free on the beach and handing out cans that are pretty much the most unhealthy thing ever, but, I'm not a scientist for that, to kind of going the other direction and having to really understand how food works, it kind of just re-architects your mind. And that ultimately led me into kind of a more organized sort of lifestyle, which led me kind of into tech and into operations of sort of managing and processing lots of different moving parts. And that's ultimately what got me into the very first on-demand tech job at Handy Book at the time, with book a home cleaner on your phone and the whole app-based on-demand tech economy. So that was a really, really wild shift that sort of just shakes you and sends you in a completely different direction. And so I just have to take it as a positive experience that then you just have to grow from. You really can feel sorry for yourself. You can see some Reddit posts in those threads about, people who are living in this way, and it is not easy, and it's every day. But you can also take away the positive pieces and say, hey, look, like if you can eat healthier, drink healthier, if you work out, it operates a certain way, but you can do better for yourself and for your life. And so that's kind of like the major takeaway that I had from that at age 27, when admittedly might have been lost for direction.
And how did it feel to experience something like this at 27, where, as you said, it's like I don't know much about type 1 diabetes. I don't know if that's a common age to get that or not, but how did it feel being like, I imagine there was some kind of why me, or like what's going on here type of thinking when it's so rare for your age group.
Yeah. Well, it's wild. So it's rare for the age group. It's called like juvenile typically because you get it early. But it's also genetic. And so it's not in my family either. So it was actually kind of quite out of the blue. And so it's almost like you have to relearn to do everything. I was leaving the hospital and after a couple of days and a doctor just said, hey, like, you're going to die in the ocean. So just be careful. You know, and I was just kind of shocked because I, first of all, I don't think a medical professional should say that. But the point was, you know, it's like you can't just go for a run because how does your body react? You can't just go and not eat all day because how is your body going to react? You can't just go and be hyper stressed all day doing all these things because how is your body going to react? And so you almost have to relearn everything that you've learned all the way up to that point, which is pretty wild because, you know, it's like, hey, beer has a ton of carbs in it. Didn't really realize that. I know that now, but you realize that really when you start to look at the data. So, you know, you get really into, you know, Dexcoms and Omnipods and all these sort of like really, really cool tech products that give you a lot of interesting data points. So now you can kind of understand what does what doesn't, you know, move your blood sugar numbers or whatever. And then you have to just say, okay, sometimes you can't be in full control. That's just the way that it is. Yesterday's exact pattern is going to react very differently today. And that's just the way that it is. And so sometimes you have to be okay with a lack of control and that.
With the uncertainty of it all.
Yeah.
So what kind of healthy things do you do now to manage and balance that, just everything, having type 1 diabetes and everything, like your blood sugar levels, how do you handle that? Less beer, I'm assuming?
Yeah, I mean, I learned that you can drink hard liquor, okay.
Lesson learned.
Having a child changes that. But it's one of those things where, like you said, you can go two directions. You can say, hey, woe is me, this sucks, like, I don't care. Or you can just say, hey, look, like, these things are probably bad for me anyways. It's hard to eat pizza, the way that fat and carbs work together. It's hard to eat ice cream. So let's go the healthy direction. So let's try to just convince yourself that food is fuel and not a pleasure center, because it can't be in this sense. And kind of just, you know, get back to it. You know, what does a run actually do to your body? Just go for one, see what happens. See what happens tomorrow and the next day. But it's sort of a process of trial and error with some really nice live data points. If you feel like shit, you start to realize why. But it's just about paying really hyper close attention to kind of what you're doing and then realizing that now, and I haven't put this together, but I have like an idea for like a weight loss product, but I'll just leave this on the yellow pad. But when there's like an opportunity to have like, let's just say something sweet, some dessert, you have to pause and say, wait, how much insulin do I need for this? And sometimes that small amount of pause makes you decide that you don't need it anyways, because you put a little piece of a break in there. So you can say, I think it's two, I think it's three, you know, I'm not sure. Never mind. And sometimes that ends up being pretty beneficial when you take an extra second to think about the actual decision of the thing that you're about to do.
And I think that goes in line with two things that I don't do, and I wish I did, and I probably should start doing. And that is writing down your spending and your food intake, like calories or some kind of like a journal of what you eat. And what I've been told, and why I would like to give this a try, financially, there was a point in my life where I was doing a really good job of that. And yes, the effect works. I imagine it works the same with your food debt or like what you're eating, whatnot. But what it does is every single time you write down any penny that goes out or any kind of food that goes in or drink or whatever, it leads you to think about the next time you're going to write that down. And when you're about to be like third donut of the day and you're just like, oh, do I really want to look back and see this? Like, do I really want to be like, God, it is a Tuesday. What am I doing? So like, I think that's a really helpful and important thing is taking note. And granted to you, it was kind of like almost forced upon you, but it was this life-changing for the better event. And I love that you see it that way. And like, that's the mindset you have, because there are two mindsets. You could say this, woe is me, or you could be like, this is in some way, shape, or form going to make me stronger, better person. And I really like that you do that. And I like that you've turned it into many positive things.
I appreciate you calling that out, because there are days, but you're so right. I think we have that choice. I think we do have a choice on the way that we perceive things. And I think we have a choice on how we want to put who we are out into the world. And I think oftentimes we don't realize that it's a choice.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I definitely. Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes I'm like, oh, this is just how things are. This is just the way, like, not putting that, like, what can I do about this thing? But then also there are some times where it's like, things just kind of happen. Like, you can't control everything at the same time. You can't control everything, but you can control what you write down in your food journal.
Yeah. And how you react.
Yeah. Or what you don't write down.
Yeah.
You'll know. Don't worry. You can't cheat yourself.
Why is there a gap? There's a gap in your journal. Friday night to Sunday.
Yeah. Oh, I was fasting.
Yeah. Have you actually, have you fasted? What's the longest you've
I've never fasted. Okay. I mean, I have for like blood work or blood tests and things like that, but that's like 12 hours and I'm like, oh, fuck. Like, I should give it a try. I'd love to. Oh, yeah. No, I'd love to give it a try. Just see what's up. But yeah, not something I'm too keen on.
The Zero app's really neat. It's literally no different than like a timer. Funny story, a small aside. I did a 36 once, 36 hours, and I was just like, let's see how long I can go. It's really, really, really difficult. But I got so hungry at the end that before I ate, I made a donation to the food bank. and I have never received more papers in my life. They must think I'm a sucker to make another, to like keep donating, because I've gotten so much mail from them to just, I don't know. It's wild. But at the same time, I think it's like probably, you know, it's not a bad idea to feel some of that manufactured suffering in a way, because there's plenty of people who don't actually have that choice. But if you can feel it for yourself, it puts things into context. So I would say if you can do one, try one. There's a lot of science. I'm not a doctor, but.
Yeah, I actually totally agree with that. I think the manufactured suffering thing you said is real. I've been listening to way too much of I really like Ryan Holiday, and so I've just been like checking out his recent podcast appearances, and like I want to start reading his books. I really like this. That's just kind of like a stoic principle. Like they have this kind of put yourself, like forge yourself through a fire, like kind of put yourself through difficult situations, not because it's like you hate yourself or you want to go through difficult times or anything like that, but it's because it makes you mentally stronger. When something difficult shows up, you can tell you, this is what I really love that he said. You can tell yourself, I've been here before. I know this feeling. I know how I feel when I give up. I know how I feel when I keep going. So I'm going to choose keep going. That one to me was a really good one. When he mentioned like knowing that feeling and knowing what both options entail.
That's badass. Yeah. He's pretty incredible, dude. His story is pretty wild. Did you ever read 48 Laws of Power? I can't tell if I can see it.
I did. Yeah. Intense. It is.
It went. So I see it. Orange. It was one of those ones that I was like, huh, interesting. And then I overanalyzed like every interaction I ever had with any boss. For my entire life, and was like, I'm putting this down.
I will see. Here's the thing. I overanalyze every interaction I ever have by nature. So when I read 48 Laws of Power and Laws of Human Nature by Robert Greene, I was like, dude, to this day, I still question whether or not that was like some of the better books I've read. Don't get me wrong. But sometimes I'm like, was that really good for me or healthy? Like straight up, dude, I recently had a big thing where it was like I was 100% overanalyzing and overreading and just kind of like thinking I know people better than I do, overestimating my own ability in this. And it was tough, but I get what you're saying. After you read some of that, you feel like Machiavelli sometimes.
Yeah. You're like, and then you think that everybody's like trying to pull one over on you. And I think most people
to
survive. Like, yeah, you know what I mean?
Dude, I needed to hear that today. Yeah. Cause I feel like that did kind of shape for a while my thinking and like people are darker than they actually, and I'll admit, like, I am someone who believes any person is capable of both good and bad, and it's just kind of like, I think people also, I tend to see the good in people, and I feel like that's kind of hurt me a couple times, but at the same time, why would I choose to see the bad in people if that's just going to lead to a miserable life in general? I would rather choose to see the good and then have it hurt every once in a while versus see the bad and just hurt all the time.
I think that's exactly right. I mean, Sam Altman, I was just looking, a founder of OpenAI, was saying something like that. I think it was him or Peter Thiel. It was Sam Altman. Anyways, he was like, you could spend your entire life guarded thinking that everyone's going to take advantage of you, or you can relax a little bit and realize that a few people might and just live a better life. And that's not the quote, but that's the gist of what I remember.
Yeah.
I thought that was really wise because it's the same. You're just like, you're charging me like too much for this thing, or like you're trying to scam me. You know, it's like probably not everyone's really trying to do that, and probably most situations aren't going to result in something that's really that big of a deal. Oh man, like I tipped too much for coffee or some sort of odd scenario. But I think that's a really good lens to look through a lot of times.
Have you ever read any books from Brené Brown?
No, I should.
I think she's really good. She does a really good job with just helping people live authentically and accept shame and guilt and kind of that kind of thinking. She's a shame researcher, which is very interesting. She's a very scientific approach to like a very emotional topic, but I absolutely love it. In one of her podcasts, she talks about how, and her sister's a therapist, so it's really interesting. She had her sister on her podcast. And she talked about how most people are, like, she didn't believe this until she went out and did the research and kind of like got it from a bunch of people, but she kind of gathered at like most people are doing the best they can with the tools they have. Not everyone has, you know, quote unquote healthy tools or like healthy coping mechanisms for living their life or how they're doing, but like most people are like trying to do their version of the best. And I think for me personally, a big error that I realized I was making is judging other people's best compared to my best, or like trying to see, like just trying to put other people, holding them to my standards. I think that's a unfair thing to do. And I like, it reminds me of a Martin Luther King quote where I try to judge people how they live on based on their values versus mine.
Yeah.
I'm butchering the quote, but that's the gist.
Makes a lot of sense. And the funny thing is it's not easy whatsoever, because you only have your own context and you have a lot of it, but I don't have your context as much as you have your own context, and so you kind of have to default to your own, right? Like some weird way. But I think that makes a lot of sense. It makes a ton of sense, and then we make all these assumptions on people being, you know, I don't know, lazy or incompetent or whatever, but it's like, no, that's just to the level of education experience or whatever that they've had to that point with this problem that's being, you know, solved or attacked.
Dude, that brings up, that's, I really like that, because that reminds me of so the book I'm reading right now, Thinking Fast and Slow, is really cool because it's about, have you read it before?
It's great, man.
Oh god, I think it's really good. So for the listener, it's about heuristics, biases, like cognitive biases, and like how I don't know how else to explain, like your brain tricks you, but it's not trying to trick you. It's trying to do the best for you, but it's also trying to exert as little effort as possible. Sometimes there are gaps in that. And one of the, I haven't gotten to this part, but I believe it's in the book. But I read somewhere that one of the best kind of cognitive biases that you can study is the fundamental attribution error. And I think that's the one that I'm thinking of. Someone correct me if I'm wrong, but what it states is we tend to attribute, when we do something wrong, external circumstances, but when someone else does something wrong, we attribute it to their character. So the best example, the simplest example, is being late to work. When we're late to work, it's traffic, something happened, like maybe my kid woke up late, I got lit, whatever. When someone else is late, they're fucking lazy. They're screwing you. They're trying to do, and it's like such an interesting bias because it exists in all of us, and it really, like, I'm able to logically and cognitively see these errors in my thinking, but I don't really notice them happening in the moment. And it's not like, especially when emotions kind of rise your just think, I don't know, like inability to think or whatever, like emotions come up and you just feel all this, like later on is when you see them. And I really hope that I can get to at some calm point in my life where I can start noticing myself, be like, okay, that's like, maybe we can see this differently and just think more with that like human rational brain than like, I guess we don't like to think about it, but I'll admit it. I think more with the animal irrational brain, I feel like, than with the normal rational human brain. But, you know, I'm making an effort.
Well, it's funny. I mean, it's like it's like you have the same level of anxiety as if the lion was chasing you, you know, back in Savannah when a female with like an angry subject line appears, you know? Yeah. You could delete it, like, but your intensity, you know.
I'd almost take the line.
Yeah, at times, right? Depends on the email, I suppose. It says, why you gotta be all caps? You know, an interesting lens to what you're saying before is: have you read Caldini about
influence?
The psych. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite books I've ever written. Read.
It's great.
Read, I guess.
It's. What you're talking about reminded me of the section where he was talking about sports teams and association. And that's a really good lens to start to notice things, right?
Yes.
We won, they lost. And so when, you know,
I think about that a lot.
It's a non-threatening one, but it like, it's a good environment to start to sort of notice those biases. You know, it's harder when, you know, if you're the example they gave where you're late to work and, you know, or whatever, and it's stressful, maybe you don't notice it in that environment. But it's like, it doesn't tend to matter that much in a sports game, you know, an event, like, kind of who cares, right? If I didn't influence their ability to hit the ball better or whatever, but that's a good, nice sort of non-threatening environment to say, oh shit, like I'm doing it again. They did lose, but you know, they also won or we lost and we also won. So kind of an interesting thing that we like to hitch our horse to, if you will, to use a kind of old analogy.
Yeah. So fast, dude. The brain is so fascinating. It's what interests me is how little we like actually know about it. Like, we know a good bit, but there is so much left undiscovered, kind of like the depths of the ocean, you know. It's like, what's really down there? Who knows?
Only James Cameron.
All right. Okay, so there was one more thing that happened that changed your life and habits, and that was having this kid. What was your daughter? Yes. Is it a daughter?
Yeah, Juniper.
Juniper. I remember. Okay, that's a beautiful name. Have you ever been to Juniper and Ivy, the restaurant?
I think I have a while ago, but we pandemicked in North Park hiking through Juniper Canyon, so it was just like in But we had been, Juniper and Ivy had been there in the past.
Delicious food. Yeah, lovely name. Really like the name. So what changed in your habits and routines having a child?
Lots changed because you're no longer sort of the king of your own castle. You're sort of like, you have a master now. So to any entrepreneur now, it's like, wait, I have a boss again? Like, damn, like what happened? So there's a lot of shift in any, you know, a lot of things change, but one thing that, you know, kind of, was difficult was I wanted to keep reading and I wanted to keep working out. And that's kind of associated with, you know, what we talked about in the past earlier about being healthy. And so, you know, as their schedules sort of start to get more consistent, you know, they can at least just sleep through the night. So you're kind of getting back to a routine. But she started to wake up pretty early. So if she woke up at 6, I would get myself up at 5 so I could start to, you know, get after some of those things. I really like, I'm coffee, but I need to just like get my blood flowing in the morning or else be a grouch. She starts waking up at 5:30. So I'm like, damn, okay, well, I can do that. I'll be competitive. So I started getting 4:30. And so I got myself to the point where now I get up at 4 every morning. You know, kind of shuffled to the coffee pot. No one is awake, which is pretty incredible. If you go for a run at like 4:30 or 5, you see, you know, a handful of cars. But James Dyson in his book I just finished was talking about this. He's like, there's this certain power you feel when you realize that you're the only one at this time doing the things that you're doing. And it kind of is a little bit motivating. So you kind of can get over that. And ironically, that's the book I've been reading at 4 a.m. But I wanted to be able to keep doing the things I wanted and realize that this had to start to reprioritize. You can't say go back to bed. She won't do that. So I have to shift my schedule. And so I've been able to kind of start opening the eyes at 4 a.m., making coffee. I read for, you know, a half hour and then get a workout in for a half hour. And then she's starting to kind of open her eyes. So that was something that I never thought I could do in the past. And now it's kind of just natural.
Sounds like necessity is the reason that you can wake up early. I notice for myself, that's very true. The time where I was consistently able to wake up at 5 or 5:30 in the morning, there was only one period in my life where I can say I was consistent about it. I've done a lot. I have early listeners in the show know that this was a big thing I was doing a while ago, not anymore, but I've done it a lot. And the most consistent that I was able to do it is because I had to. Yep. It's because the only time that I could get myself to journal and go to the gym was at this time of day, because the rest of my day, I was working a 9-to-5 job. And then after, I was working a job from like 5 to 8 or like 5 to 9. So like, I had to do a lot of shit, man. Like, you had to like cook in between meetings and calls, like all this shit. But like my whole entire week was basically taken by work, and I just had to, like, if I wanted time to myself while also getting good sleep, I had to wake up at 5:30. So then my next question to you is, when do you go to bed and do you feel like you're getting enough sleep? Probably with a kid, the answer's no, but
it's getting better. It's a fair question. It's getting better. I think that's the hardest part for me, is I typically feel like I'm an evening night person. And so that's the hardest part, is that I've tried to go to bed at 8:30, which is crazy early. I was in the past like an 11 p.m., you know, midnight type person. But that's one of those things. It's like, if you go to bed that late, you can't get up in the morning. And so you kind of have to make that shift. And actually, it tends to work out okay. Took me a couple weeks to actually be able to read in the mornings. The first week or two, it was just like all the pages blended together. And now it's actually being, the information I think is getting in there. We'll see. But, you know, after long days, kind of like you're talking about and you're experiencing, you know, you sit down to read a book or whatever and you just fall asleep. So you're not actually getting that time in there. And another thing that I realized was the only time I was using that evening time for was just like watching TV. And I wasn't doing anything. So I was just like, you know what? Let's just read it a little bit, go to bed kind of early, and then start really early. And it's actually kind of nice. I'll be honest. If you want to join me, text me in the morning. Let me know when you wake up.
I'll hit you up. Maybe if you're competitive, I'll hit you up at 3:45. See what you do with that.
It's happened. You know when your alarm hasn't gone off yet, and you're just like, nah.
Yeah. So how has this impacted your productivity? Would you say it's gone up?
I think so. I think it's been, because I think I'm able to, so you might have listened to this. Did you listen to the most recent episode? Sam Parr of My First Million. Sam Parr was talking about when
he around. I'm not a consistent listener.
He made this interesting point. I don't know. Maybe I'll try to make the same one. But he said that you're kind of the average of, you know, the 5 or 6 people you spend your time with. But when he was younger growing up, he said he didn't have all that many people around him. I think something to that effect. And so he just read biographies. And I kind of got a little bit obsessed with biographies over the last 6 months. And I started listening to them. There's this podcast called Founders. And the guy reads a book and then literally does a podcast in an hour. And he tells you about the whole book. And it's that same concept of listening to Rockefeller, what's he do? And, you know, fish ate the whales, the story of the whole, banana trade growing. Anyways, the point is, like, if I was able to incorporate some of these sort of uses of time instead of some of the other sort of less valuable uses of time, it kind of inspires you to push through some of the challenges of building something. Listening to these people just, you know, knock down walls in a sense, and not really feeling like they're being stopped, can kind of change your mindset a little bit and say, hey, wait, you know, that's not what I'm doing. Maybe isn't that big of a deal, that risky, that scary, that hard.
Like, yeah.
Just send the next email, move through the next things. Don't be scared of X, Y, and Z. Just kind of, these guys did it, I'll do it too. And you surround yourself with a bit of a tribe of mentors in a sense, even though many of them are really not with us anymore. But you have the text and you have the book. So by changing the habits and incorporating those types of things into my life, feels like I'm able to kind of accomplish a little bit more with the projects and the startups and the things that I want to do, because, you know, you're surrounded by people who've also done it.
Dude, that's a really fascinating take on that quote. I like it a lot, actually. I think that's a really cool, especially if you tend to be on like the introverted side. Plus also think about some of the people you spend the most time with. Your daughter. Are you really going to be the same as an 18-month-old? Probably not.
Fair. It's very, very fair. Those are some hard days sometimes where you're like, have I spoken any real words today for 6 hours? So I'm pumping in some content in my ears.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
We'll see how she grows up. Maybe it's a mistake.
All right. And with that, it's time for the closing questions, Jonah. These are just the questions at the end of the interview that I ask. They're more for fun. They're more casual. We've talked a lot about them, about the reading one. But let's start off with, first of all, what kind of music do you listen to?
I am fresh off of a really cool playlist that came out of Mykonos. And it's this playlist that came from Alamazoo and Scorpios. So we did our honeymoon in Greece. And so it's the type of music that's maybe a little more rhythmic, lyricless, and just sort of grooves and blends in between.
Oh, I've been to Mykonos. I know exactly what you're talking about. It's like the type of music you listen to when you're laying on those like little beach chairs, the beach huts, and it's just the repetitive going on, like
annihilate emails on music like that, because you don't get broken up by like the different, you know, the changes.
Yeah. Ooh, I kind of like that. Could you send that over? I'm gonna give that as a work music try.
Oh, it's lovely. Yeah, absolutely. I'm on like day 4 of the same playlist, so I can kind of start to recognize the songs now, even though there's some jam to them.
You got some favorites? You kind of bop your head to one a little more?
Yeah, but it's an environment too, because like you said, you've been to those places where it's like, hey, chill, slow down.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of brings that out.
They're on island time in Mykonos, dude. I remember, so when I went to Greece, I was with my best friend and we were in Mykonos. And we were pretty hungover trying to get food. Yeah. And we got into the restaurant and we had this realization of like how hungry we are. And we're like, dude, we're not going to get served for another hour.
Slovakia story. Oh, yeah, I know what you mean. And that was probably at some insane time of the night.
It was delicious, though. I mean, whatever we got, I know every meal I had, it was incredible. I just loved it there, dude. The sun, just the hanging out. It was great.
I remember us trying to do the time change. We get there and it's like 11 p.m. and we're like, dude, we got to go out. But we're so tired. We passed out for 3 hours and got up at you know, 4, and we're just like, whatever. Let's just see what's up.
Yeah.
It was going off at 4 a.m.
Yeah.
We stayed out till like 7 or 8 just because like that's what you do on weekends.
That's what they do. What kind of movie or TV shows are you watching? Coco Melon.
I heard a weird story about that. I'll tell you about that later. We're trying to do Oscars movies.
So nice.
I'm trying to like get what is it? Everywhere All at Once. I forget. It's like Showtime only. It's the one about the multiverses. It looks sick, but I haven't seen it yet, and I can't seem to subscribe to another platform to watch it. But anything that's kind of hitting the Oscars, we've been kind of jamming with, and there's some good ones on there.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah.
What about any books? What, now that you finished the Dyson one, what book are you reading now?
So I have this book. I'm going to pop open my book list here, cause I've got a whole bunch of them on here. But this one just arrived and, I'm really, really excited for it. Let's see. It is called, where are we at? Can't see it. It's on the counter. Damn. Okay, I'll have to find it. It's about a master negotiator. It's the best negotiator in the world. That one's pretty incredible.
Is it the FBI hostage negotiator?
It might be actually him.
Never Split the Difference.
It is not that one, but I heard really, really good things about that one too.
I think that one's great.
No, the Daily Rituals is on the list. How Innovation Works is really high on the list. Have you heard that one?
No.
That one sounds really, really good. Do Matt Ridley?
I do not.
Matt Ridley's really good. He wrote The Rational Optimist. And it's a pretty interesting book that makes a decent case for coal power. And I'm into green tech and I'm into the future, but you close the book up and you're just like, huh, I could see that. I could see why we should not just close the door on that. So, Matt Ridley's pretty legit. But how about you? What do you got on the list?
Thinking Fast and Slow.
That's great.
I got a couple here. I'm a snag from this pile because I made the reread or like the read through pile. Meditations. I really want, after listening to a lot of the Stoic philosophy, dude, I just want to go through. I think it's incredible how, this is what I like about meditations. The fact that at that time, the Roman Emperor, Marcus Aurelius, arguably the most powerful person at that time right there, is writing a journal to himself that he doesn't think anyone is ever going to read. Like, he's just writing to himself. And that's, meditations is just like his musings to him. And it's just like people from there take, I don't know, just great amount of inspiration. It's just like, this is what this dude was writing to himself. I can't imagine what like a conversation with him was like. I think that one would be a good one. I have Anti-Fragile by Nassim Taleb. Stop Asking Questions by Andrew Werner. He's a podcast host. I haven't heard too much of his podcast, but I know like the type of guests he gets on, and he's done over 2,000 interviews. So this book's on like asking questions for interviews. So I think that's relevant to me. I want to reread How to Win Friends and Influence People, because that's, I feel like the style that that book is in, not writing style, but like the layout of chapters and everything, is one I really like and I would like to take inspiration from for my book. So yeah, that's currently, and actually like Influence, the one that we mentioned earlier by Robert Cialdini, that's on the reread list. But I've read that before. It's just one of the most impactful books I've read. So I want to give it a thorough read through.
Yeah. That's a really, really good one. Yeah, there's some good, there's really, really good ones on that list. Black Swan, is that on the list?
I heard about that one. Isn't Nassim Taleb, isn't he the author of that? Yeah.
By Randomness is another one.
I have a couple Malcolm Gladwell ones that I want to get cracking, because I've read The Bomber Mafia, and I thought his style of writing is one of the most captivating, like that. Mm-hmm. I had such a hard time putting that book down. The way he weaves story to his arguments and like narrative and whatever he's going at, and just like the ending of that book, the last page was such a fucking mic drop. I was like, damn, I like this dude's style, I want to read more. But I mean, you know, probably as well as I do, every time you are halfway through a book, you have a list. By the time you're at the end of the book, that list has morphed and other books have been added in and piled and everything. So I don't know. That's what we were talking about earlier. I really want to find more time to just like sit down and read. I'm also reading a book on like, it's like The Ultimate Guide to Motorcycling. It's like one of the well-known texts for writing, just like writing better. There's just so much I want to read, dude. So much.
It's funny. It's one of those things where if you can get a little consistent, you can rip through books. So it's like, okay, if I do 10 pages every morning, you know, at a minimum, that's a book a month. Nice. 15 pages every 20 days, 300 page book. Pretty decent.
Good point.
Hopefully that math's right. But anyways, yeah, it's like that type of thing. If you can be consistent, you can crush through. And what I'm hoping on banking on is the more reading I do, the faster I'll get, and the more reading I'll be able to do. And kind of then you start to kind of cruise through some of these books. But we shall see. But I have been pretty consistent in the mornings.
Dude, I have a different problem from you. I read too fast, and sometimes that's not a flex, everybody. It's actually a bad thing because I skip over words and I just forget parts and whatnot, whatever. But yeah, I need to slow it down and not like try to zoom through it, because I guess that's like my spirit, dude. That's my nature. Like when I eat, I just scarf food down. I'm a fast eater. So it's like, I want to mindfully read more so than just like trying to read just to, you know, get on with it.
Yeah, it's a different goal. The goal maybe needs to shift, because the goal isn't crush pages. The goal is absorb information.
Yeah.
And so shifting the mindset might help a little bit.
Maybe even also like getting into audiobooks too. That might help me.
I think they can. I like the rewind button, but I'll wander and my mind's gone, and then you're 3 pages later, so you have to kind of go backwards, which works too, because maybe you get the text twice. But
yeah,
super, super curious. I don't know. We need to average our styles. That's all I have to say.
Yeah. We'll find you and your website. I was going to say app. It's a website.
I'm bombing around LinkedIn. I decided that I would like to stick to one platform for the time being, possibly a mistake. I'm on Twitter. I don't really use it, but I'm Jonah Peek. Just playing around on LinkedIn, and my site's linked there, but it's just called We Covered Letters. And I'll be just throwing little things on there as I develop them. The last teaser would be something I'm developing on the side that says, don't send this letter. And that can be letters that maybe help you get through some anger that maybe you shouldn't send. So anyways, we're toying with some different things that could be fun. So don't send that.
All right, Jonah. Well, thanks for coming on the show. I really appreciate you coming on. This was a fantastic conversation. I had a really good time. I really liked a lot of the topics we went on. It was not a direction I thought it would go, but it's one that I'm very thankful we did go.
Yeah, great chatting with you. Thank you for the time. So much fun.
All right. See you later, man.